This Edgar Profiles podcast is supported by Ping. Edgar is an association of national federations formed in the year 2000 to develop and encourage initiatives which raise the awareness of golf, both as a participation and competitive sport for individuals with disability. For more information about Edgar, please visit edgargolf.com. Your host for this episode is Tony Bennett. Ping. Play your best.
That's the thing about a motorbike, says Gareth McNealy. You just put the helmet on and see where the bike takes you. It seems that Gareth accepts life as it comes. He describes himself as being happy-go-lucky, but also with high standards and expectations. It's just as well that Gareth can go with the flow and keep things in perspective, as one day when he was only 28 years of age, his life took an unexpected turn that would put many into a spin. Please enjoy my conversation with Gareth McNealy.
Ping. Play your best.
First and foremost, thanks very much for making the time, Gareth.
No problem.
And I've got a kind of a loose connection to Ireland.
Yeah.
The loose connection is that my great-grandfather went from Ireland, but he went to Scotland in the potato famine.
Okay.
So I'm kind of got a little bit of Irish in me, uh-huh. And of course my father had plenty of time in Ireland as well over the years. So I kind of class myself as, you know, whatever it is, 1/8 or 1/16 of Irish. Maybe I could have played for Ireland at one time.
I bet like most Americans. Yeah.
So, but it's always good to speak to the Irish because you've always got a good story to tell. But only have you got a good story to tell, you've got a really good story to tell because, you know, you're a good player. And you've got a disability, mm-hmm. and I'd like to find out a little bit about how you first started to play, because we expect that everybody in Ireland was born with a club in the crib, because everybody plays golf in Ireland. But yeah. Was that the case with you?
It was. I think I was maybe 7 or 8, and my aunt played. My parents didn't play golf. My aunt played at a club on the outskirts of Belfast, Fort William, and she bought me an 9-iron and a putter. And I wish I still had the putter, because it was one you could putt left or right-handed with. And I'm left-handed, but I play golf right-handed. But I traded it in somewhere down the line. But I love putting both directions. So she got me that, and we had a field out the back of the house, which there's now a housing development on. But myself and some of the neighbours would have went down in there and, you know, they dug a hole and put a stick in it, and with a couple of different tee positions, and that's how I got started. I probably asked Dad if I could join Mazarin Golf Club when I was about 13, and because he didn't play in those days, it was you needed to know someone, and there was a waiting list for kids. So it was probably about 15 before I played, and I was junior member there all the way through my university days, which were spent in Scotland, and I stayed in Scotland after for work, and I didn't renew my membership, and that was probably about 23 then, and I was playing off 14, and I then had a motorbike accident when I was 28, and I lost my right leg as a result of that, and golf went to the back of my mind. First leg I had was very functional, but the knee wouldn't have given you the confidence for walking around a slopey golf course. So I got, about 9 years ago, I got an older version of this leg I have now, with a electronic knee, computerised, sensors in the foot and sensors in the knee, and it was just like getting your leg back. You know, you give it a lot more. There's a torque absorber in the foot, so there's movement in the ankle, and just a lot more confidence walking about the course. So I played a few 9 holes here and there, and sort of started to get the bug again, and wondered if my leg would stick, being able to play 18 on a regular basis, where I could justify having the membership. So 2 years ago I decided to join up, and it was after seeing tweet somewhere along the line where I realised that Edgar existed. I'd never heard anybody talking about it before. And I joined Mazarine June 2 years ago, and the goal was to play in some Edgar competitions and see where we could take it from there.
I mean, you've raised a whole bunch of questions there for me, so
no problem.
I've got loads and loads to talk to you about. But, I mean, you've just given me, you know, lots of different areas to go into, and one of those areas would be, first of all, just to say I've got it clear in my mind, nobody else in your family then played?
No.
So you were number one.
My aunt, as I called her, and she's not even asking my aunt, she's my mother's cousin who grew up with my mother name, and she was single and she had a good job and she always treated us, myself and my sister, well, and yet it was her who bought the first couple of clubs.
So then off you go to the golf course, as you say, when you're about 15 years of age. At that time, was there any kind of junior section there? Was there a few of the lads around?
A real buzz in junior section, probably, I'm sure, 40 to 50 lads and maybe 7 or 8 girls. And we spent our summers there. I spent from about 15 to I was 19. I was 19 and started to work in the airport, and was earning money for university then. But we spent every day in the summer on that course. And a couple of old members who looked about us, and we had different teams and just great memories of the club. And I think that was why there's another club in my town, but that was why when I rejoined, I chose Mazarine again, because it felt like it was my club.
And it'd be a pretty good place, I would imagine, because they probably still had the troubles around about that time.
Yeah.
So probably for the parents, it would be a great place to get the kids there, because it's kind of a safe environment.
Well, that's it. And we went down and, you know, your golf was paid for. Mum maybe gave us £2. That bought a chip of cheese on it and a pint of blackcurrant water, you know, and you were there for the day.
You were away for the day.
I saw days we played 36 holes and just loved it.
So then you went off, you said, to university in Scotland.
Scotland, yeah.
And what were you taking then when you were at university?
I was marketing.
Right.
And I was at Stirling University, and they have a good golf scholarship there, which has improved even more since my time there. But there's also, uniquely in Stirling University campus, there's a little 9-hole Air 3 Castle course. So it was open, used to open maybe around Easter time. And for £1.70, we could play those 9 holes, and we played those every day. And I said, I'm not graduating from Stirling Uni till I shoot 27 round this, this 9-hole. I mean, the best I ever got was 29, but great times, so.
And then you stayed in Scotland?
Stayed in Scotland for a year, worked for a company there, a job, for when I graduated, and then I went home, I thought, for 6 months, and just the way things go, you know, 5 years later, back working actually for the company I was working for in Scotland when I had the motorbike accident. So
tell me about the motorbike accident. What happened there?
I worked in it was car hire firm I was working for. Worked on the Saturday morning, had arranged to meet 3 lads who I'd been in school with for a run out, and we didn't know where we were going to go. Quite often I enjoyed that about the motorbike. You just put the helmet on and see where the bike took you. And we went to run down the coast, down to Newcastle, home of Royal County Down. And we'd gone along the coast road there, and I don't remember any of that. We come back into Newcastle town itself, and pulling away from a set of traffic lights, the throttle stuck open on my bike. And the guy said that it wheelied, and just, you know, it was a sports bike, it would have probably done not 100 in about 5 seconds, you know. So it was a case of, I don't remember it, but it was a case of abandoned ship, and I hit a railing at the side of the road, which stopped me hitting the wall, which was first blessing. And then the bottom of the leg was actually off in the boot. So the guys, one of the guys strangely had a belt on his leathers, which I would never wear a belt on my leathers, and they got the tourniquet on, stopped the blood, the bleeding, and there was a first aider who was a lifeboat volunteer. So between them, they got me sort of initially stabilised, and the ambulance apparently came very quick. So off to the hospital, and the surgeon told mum and dad my knee was too badly damaged and there was a break in above the knee. He would use it as this area, a site of amputation, and he said that night, hopefully this will be the only operation Gareth will need. And thankfully that has been the only operation. I healed up very well, very quickly, about a month in hospital, and then about 10 weeks of rehab, and they send you out walking. And I can honestly say I've never had a bad day. I know how lucky I was to survive that accident. I've been in ditches, watched motorbike racing with my father and grandfather and family from when I was a little child, and road racing in Ireland is it's a huge thing, and that thrill of seeing the bikes whiz by, and I know the consequences of coming off a motorbike always can be quite tragic. So I'm thankful every day that the NHS has provided me with a brilliant leg, and it allows me to lead a very normal life. There will be days when you've got sores in your stump and things where you take things easy. I work for myself, and I can work from home on the laptop and sit in a pair of shorts and not bother putting the leg on. So no, life's good.
Tell me about the period immediately after, because I mean, how old were you when
28 when I had the accident? Yeah,
so you're 28 years of age, you've now got an amputation. Mm-hmm. And as you say, in 4 weeks' time, they basically say, right, well, off you go.
Yeah.
Do you think? What was going through your mind at that stage? Because, I mean, obviously the physical disability is one thing, but the emotional and mental anguish or whatever you have to go through in that period of time must also have an effect, for a period of time. So what was that like?
A strange thing happened. The day after my accident, there was two brothers from my town were killed in a motorbike accident. And very quickly, that brings it home to you that it could have been me. At 28 years old, I could have been dead and buried, or, as I say, a lot worse off than I am. So I think my attitude was very positive from the very start. And I'm surrounded by a great family and close friends, and there was nights when I was in the hospital where it was like a party. People visited me. The nurses turned a blind eye to the two-day bed rule, and people kept my spirits up. And I think from I got out from the hospital and then the rehab started, my uncle was retired and he drove me in every day, kept my spirits up. We used to go for lunch places, go drives here and there. And it was always there was always something to do, and so just reminders that life is good, you know, like I'm still here, there's plenty to do. And one of my focuses initially was to get back to work as quick as possible, and I went back part time, and then I found it tough that I couldn't do everything that I used to do in that particular job. Hire cars, I could have been driving 15, 20 different cars in a day, washing, cleaning if need be, and just getting things ready. So that was a big change, and I think subconsciously I needed to step away from that and went down another route career wise but yeah, keeping busy and keeping positive, and the people around me kept me positive. So yeah, hard as it may seem to believe, there weren't many bad days, you know, and even the quiet moments on your own, the overall feeling was I'm lucky to still be here. Yeah, and that's where the way I still feel about it.
Were you always very positive, you know, even as a youngster?
I think it was always happy-go-lucky. Yeah. I have high standards of myself, and sometimes I'd be my own worst enemy if I don't achieve what I expect, and be hard on myself, much harder than anyone else. Interestingly, on the golf course, even though I played a handicap of 18, I expect to be much better, but I can enjoy my golf, and I've played with people who only enjoy their golf when they're playing well. I can forget about the last hole and play the next one, and I do the postmortems at night, and often with my dad, and he'll say, how did you have a 7? And I say, sure, Rory McIlroy had a 7 last week, you know, can easily happen sometimes. Yeah, but on the course, yeah, I even though I have the high standards, I can let the previous hole go and try again. Yeah.
So you're now playing in a few events, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're beginning to see what it's like playing in some of the European Disabled Golf Association events, and you're competing with other players. And so, what does golf mean to you?
I'd say golf means a number of different things. At home, it's a relaxation. I enjoy playing with my friends. I also enjoy playing in the four ball with the other three guys I play with on a Saturday morning, and the banter that playing for a pound brings. Playing in these tournaments has opened a whole new world up to me. I saw Scotland last year, and with the university connection, I thought I'll go there, tell my friends and family I'm going to play golf in St Andrews. It was just felt so good, even though it wasn't the old course, it was still St Andrews. And drove up the road from Stranraer in the car thinking, yeah, I'm going to play in a golf tournament and yeah, it's all be good. And I shot an 868 on the first day, and I was joint leader, and I went, oh, I could win this, oh, the competitive heads come out here. And day two and day three didn't go so well, but came away with ninth position. Driving back down the road on the phone to my good friend and coach Johnny Foster, and we were talking about it, and I said, I'm absolutely buzzing about the people I've met, the standard of the competition, how when you're socialising with them after the golf, it's four lads, it's not an amputee, a one-arm guy, a guy with no fingers, whatever. It's just four golfers who want to do their best. And I played in just the one tournament last year, and I set some golf goals at the start of this year, and one of them was to try and play in four EDGA events. So this here in Sweden's my second event. I'm booked to go to English Open at the Warwickshire now in a few weeks. And all being well, I'll hopefully get out to the Algarve in November time. So, and absolutely loving it. And go down to the course. I love being down in our course. It's quite quiet in the evenings. I love being out practicing, and it's always with that view to just improve. Because I have seen my fellow countryman Brendan Lawler playing off one, and some of the other guys that he competes with, and the standard is superb. And I'll never be off one, but I would love to think that I can be a bit closer to them, you know. So,
tell me about the work that you do with Johnny, because he helps you a little bit with your golf.
Yeah.
So, what kind of work do you do with him? I don't want to get too much into the specific of, you know, what kind of technical movements, but just generally, yeah. How do you work with him? And
Johnny and myself have been friends for over 20 years, and social friends for a long time. And then as I started to get more into golf over the last couple of years, he would invite me to play with him different places, and you know, to play with somebody and compare yourself to somebody who played for Ireland as an amateur was a great experience. And I had gone up to his academy, and nights I would go and hammer a bucket of balls, what your average amateur does, and maybe he'd have a lesson in, and he'd have 5 minutes at the end, he'd have a look at me and give me a wee tip here or there. And then last year, one of his coaches who works for him in the academy, Chris, he helped me out in five or six lessons. And then I said this year to Johnny, I would like, you know, if you don't mind, if you can fit the time in, if you could help me. So we would just, he would ask me what I would like to do, or what, and again, it's not reinventing the wheel, it's just small things. So the last time I was with him there, it was just more about getting a bit more turn in the backswing, and I felt I was hitting a lot of shots then. And I had hurt my left wrist as a result of that. So we were just working on ball position and a wee bit more in the turn, just to improve the strike. And it's very relaxed with him. You know, he's a busy guy. He coaches a lot of good players, but he has that time for his one-legged mate, you know, who still thinks he's a golfer.
You've been quite instrumental in speaking to the Confederation of Irish Golf, and along with others, and now the Confederation of Irish Golf is a member of EDGA. What do you think that means to golf in Ireland for the golfers with disability?
I think it's an incredible opportunity. There's a number of, I feel a number of benefits. Along with Brendan Lawler, met with Rory and Anne from Confederation last week. Just a general discussion about disabled golf, and one of the questions I asked them was how many disabled golfers are there in Ireland, and they didn't know. And they said to me that as part of their funding, they're asked that question from government or whoever provides, and it's always something that they've had to put a zero with an asterisk, as we don't know. So I've asked them to see if they can survey the golf clubs, because they should have access to, I think they do have access to all the secretary manager emails. So they're going to hopefully put a survey together and find out who else is out there, because we know there has to be more. I would love to see some sort of setup where young kids who maybe have an interest in sport but through a disability or an illness have never been able to play other team sports or whatever, where we could provide either a coaching or development days to get them into golf. And then there's also the, will be a dream for me would to be to have an Irish Disabled Open. We have some beautiful courses in Ireland, and I'm talking to guys here in Sweden, I've been chatting to guys in Wales, and people want to come to Ireland and play golf. And I think that it's something that could happen in a not too distant future, where we could put together something along with the Confederation and the Union to have an EGA tournament in Ireland. And the final dream would be to have an Ireland team representing Ireland at EGA events with some sort of support. I'm sitting here in Sweden, and I've seen the setup the Swedish have. It's incredible. You see them all wearing their t-shirts, their bags. The French are the exact same. So I'm not hoping for somebody to win the lottery and provide everything for us overnight, but I think it's something that down the line, with a bit of work, conversations with the right people, we can have a competition. We can have maybe our own association for disabled golfers, either as a part of the Confederation or as a separate organisation working closely with them, and also just that development for young kids. And I put a tweet out and a Facebook message last week after Brendan and myself had the meeting, and I've already had a tweet from a father who has a son with a handicap who, I'm not sure exactly what his disability is, but he's got a good golf handicap, and he's playing in a club, and I'd never heard of him. Another lad sent me a Facebook message just yesterday, who's from City of Derry Golf Club, and he plays off 10, and he would like to get involved. So from all of us, from knowing four, all of a sudden from talking to a few people, we're at 8, and that has to only be the start of it, you know. So no, it's exciting times.
A very important question I'm going to ask you now, which is, if you were able to be with somebody who's just come off the motorbike, mm-hmm. and has been given the news that either the leg has been taken, or they're given the news that we're about to take your mm-hmm. leg, what advice would you want to give that person?
Firstly, I would say take every day as it comes. Listen to the physios and the people who'll get you back on your feet. Work hard, but don't push yourself too much. And know that there are opportunities for you out there in life, both in work, in career. It hasn't affected my career in any way, other than taking a bit of time at the start to rehabilitate. And that there's sporting opportunities. There's sporting opportunities in a number of different sports. I competed in 2010 in the Amputee Games in swimming and got some medals for that. But golf was my passion. That's where I glued the TV watching it, and that's where I wanted to be. But yeah, there's life after an accident. There's life after an amputation, if it's either through an accident or an illness. And to go for it. If you get yourself into a sport, it doesn't matter what sport it is, with other like-minded people, you can be travelling the world. My only problem at the minute is who's going to pay for my next tournament? Because literally with Edgar, we could be playing golf in a different country every couple of weeks from March to November, and that's a great thing. It's something that really appeals to me.
Gareth, I really appreciate your time. It's been fascinating chatting to you.
Thank you, Tom.
I wish you all the very best. I'm sure that we're going to see more of you in more Edgar tournaments, and we'll see you climbing the ranking. And
fingers crossed.
Hopefully we'll be able to get more people from Ireland playing, and we'll get that team there, maybe in the European Championship, Team Championship next
year
in 2019.
That would be very nice. Yeah.
Who knows? Gareth, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
Ping. Play your best. Our partners are very important to Edgar, and I would like to introduce you to a short, true story told by Ping.
A key resource that has enabled Ping to perform experiments and extensive tests on new golf designs is a superhero who was once described as the world's best golfer. At only 5 feet high, 6 feet wide, and 7 foot thick, weighs over 1,000 pounds, he is known as Pingman. Pingman is a robot that is used for product and prototype testing. He mimics human movement by having a shoulder turn and a wrist hinge that can load a golf shaft on the way down. He can even bend 10 degrees at the waist like a human golfer to accommodate clubs from a wedge to a driver. Pingman hits tens of thousands of golf balls a year. He only hits brand new golf balls to ensure accurate testing and tests 9 different face locations on the product to ensure we know exactly how product will perform from not only centrally struck shots, but from off-centered struck shots too. Pingman can swing it up to 160 miles per hour, which compared to a couple of Ping's big hitters in Bubba Watson and Tony Finau, who get it out at a very respectable 125 miles per hour, Pingman is like no other golfer on the planet. Thanks to the data Pingman produces, Ping only introduces new product when testing it to be proven to be better performing than the current product.
This was an Edgar Player story supported by Ping, helping golfers to play their best. For more information about Edgar, please visit edgargolf.com. Stay tuned for the next Edgar podcast. Ping. Play your best.